No fear.
No pain.
Health.
Light death. Side of ranch.
The worst salad imaginable. Welcome to the Commentary Track, a Kamen Rider podcast. I'm your host, Jared.
I'm Cody.
And I'm producer, Jed.
Welcome back, boys. We're down to the end game now.
That we are, and we're settling in for what is our most ambitious episode to date.
And because we only have a few episodes left, and we have a lot more to cover in a lot less time, we are going to kind of streamline things a little bit. So for this week, we won't be doing a Will It Grong. We'll be moving just straight into the episodes because, let's be honest, we're really excited to see these guys go at it. We've only seen from Godol so far, him just basically doing to Goma what the Hulk did to Loki at the end of the first Avengers movie, and I'm here for it. Apparently, Dagova last episode scared Kuga so bad he literally went white from fear.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm so hoping that these episodes are going to be good because we've been in a bit of a rut these last few ones. But given that Godol has been there since the Go showed up, I think he won't disappoint.
That's the one benefit of having low standards. You're now really hard to disappoint.
Yeah, that'd be a total shame if it managed to somehow.
Well, shall we get into it?
Yeah, let's go ahead and get into it. As a reminder, today we are watching episodes 44, 45, and 46, Crisis, Arch Enemy, and Indomitable.
Episodes 44 through 46 were written by Arakawa Naruhisa and directed by Watanabe Katsuya. They originally aired December 17th, 24th, and 31st, 2000. A jump to the sky turns to a rider review.
Off to a much better start this week.
Yes, this is going in the right direction, and I'm very appreciative of it. But let's not waste too much time. Let's go ahead and just jump into it. So we start off with Godai and Ichijo taking a pleasant morning jog in the Chiyodai ward.
Ah, yes. Taking time for your cardiovascular health is very important, Jared.
Also, you know, it's nice to have some quiet time with your significant other.
A nice date, you know?
Exactly. But as these things go, the conversation does unfortunately turn to business. The discussion of the fact that the ULFs have been getting stronger and the thought that maybe Godai needs to get stronger as well. But we get a wonderful little moment of levity because Godai stumbles and falls on his face.
What a goofball.
And Ichijo turns around and holds out a hand and picks him up and they laugh and we cut to the credits. From there, we're at police headquarters. Godai and Ichijo have come out of the dressing room. They're all spiffied up now.
Yeah, putting clothes back on.
And Ichijo gets a phone call from Inakita. She says that she is on her way, that she has developed these tracer rounds, but that the nerve disruptor rounds aren't quite ready yet, but that she'll be there. She has her meeting, hangs up. Godai comments about how she put so much effort into her job and that must be really tricky while also being a parent. And to help further emphasize that point, Inakita gets another phone call, this time from her mother, browbeating her about the upcoming parent-teacher conference for the day. Inakita says that she hasn't forgotten, that she has a meeting with the rest of the task force. They're running behind. That was supposed to be a couple days ago, but it has to be this morning, and as soon as it's done, she's going to head to the school. And mother continues to browbeat her, and the camera just sort of lingers on Sayuru wobbling his paper craft.
Which book. Still looks unopened.
It is unopened.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, I feel bad for the kid. I really do. But the last two Grongi, even though they were jokes to us, like knocked out over a grand in terms of kill count in like a week, what she's doing is pretty important. And I'm pretty sure that comes before a parent-teacher conference.
I mean, yes. And super ill-equipped to talk about these things, but I can't help but feel that potentially Japanese cultural norms and gender standards are coming into play. Because if Inakita was a dad, no, absolutely. The fact that he's not home is the important thing. It means he's doing what he's supposed to.
That, yeah, actually, now that you say about that, we probably would not even have the same conversation. Like, his family would be taking care of it and been like, we do the noble sacrifice so that he can do his job. I didn't even think about it in that lens. That makes it even worse.
Even if this were American, there would still be that difference.
Yeah, that's true. A pretty standard norm here is the support of the family while dad slaves away at a job.
But I do also get the trying to balance work and family life, and the fact that the paper crafts is still unopened after at least weeks, if not longer. Surely there has to have been a night she could have done one with him.
Counterpoint, 1,000 people dead.
Just saying, over the course of, again, weeks or months. Yes, right now, 1,000 plus people dead. Focus on this, but before, maybe?
I think the point is there is no good answer.
There's not.
No. So let's move on. We cut to Pol Pol, and Pops is staring at a picture on the wall. And Nana is discussing her plans for the future, and she asks Pops if it's okay for her to take more acting lessons. Glad she's, you know, trying to get back into the swing of things for that.
Nana made better hair choices today.
Significantly.
Thank God.
Yes, she did.
No more double rat tail. All right.
And Pops turns, yeah, absolutely, no, go for it. Glad to hear it. And Nana makes a comment about never knowing when her big break is going to happen, so she's got to be prepared. Keep dreaming, Nana, but good for you.
Having come up a former theater kid, I embrace the fact that being a performing artist generally just means a career as a waiter.
Yeah.
Or equivalent service industry job.
Tale as old as time.
That's a new one. I like that.
Realize I shouldn't be, but I'm still impressed that you had that just waiting for us.
I wonder how much of your week you spend dedicated to finding just memery to throw our way.
Guess it helps that he knows us so well. He's like, at some point they're going to say this, and when they do...
Fucking Seto Kaiba over here with his bag full of trap cards.
Pops turns back to this picture on the wall, and Nana's like, oh, you really love that picture, don't you? And he kind of nods.
Gorilla Mountain.
And she goes, wait, did you take that picture yourself? No, I didn't. We finally look at it, and it, I'm pretty sure, is Everest. At the very least, it's a mountain. And yes, as Cody points out, it kind of weirdly looks like King Kong if King Kong turned into a mountain.
It's an oddly specific image, but it does get you there.
It is. From there, we cut to the police headquarters, and we see that Godai has gotten new business cards. The last time we saw one, it had 1999 on it and scratched through, and 2000 was handwritten on. Now he has cards that have printed saying that he is man of 2000 skills, and also professional dream chaser. It's so nice to have that back.
Yeah, it's weird that he didn't add monster murder. Or transforming into a living god. And any of the things he's been up to lately. Really?
And presumably 2001. I feel like he's got to be over 2000 at this point because, yes, turning into living god and genociding a race of monsters are two distinctly separate skills.
Also, like, electricity absorption?
God, could he be already up to, like, 2005 skills? The cards just got reprinted and they're already outdated.
Yeah, his Instacart vendor is just so upset. Or was it Vistaprint? It's Vistaprint.
Probably Vistaprint.
Yeah, his Vistaprint dude is just livid.
Everybody sits down and they start discussing the two previous ULF attacks and the discussion about how these ones also were able to change forms. And a discussion briefly of Kuga's brush up with Daguva. Where Godai then substitutes like, yeah, he's has like a crushing aura to him. Just looking at him made me feel terrified. He's going to be frighteningly strong.
Did he even see him? I thought I heard him.
He turned in the direction. His vision's just as enhanced as his hearing in Pegasus form, so my guess would be he saw him.
He both him.
As well as one can, since Daguva's got literally the strongest AT field of any of the Grongi.
Yeah. They point that out multiple times this episode.
Inakita shows up with her giant metal suitcase that we find out is full of bullets.
Ah, bullets.
And she explains that these are the new tracer rounds she has developed that have 20 nanotech tracking devices inside them.
Implication: this police department has access to nanotechnology.
Or at least she does.
In the year 2000.
Correct.
That's concerning.
Yes. I want to know what other series of historical changes have led to this moment. But she says that as long as one of the 20 makes it into the Gurongi's bloodstream, the bioelectricity in their bodies will be able to power its signal.
Ah, yes, the bioelectricity that's available in one's bloodstream.
This one is slightly more believable than, like, the Matrix using humans as literal batteries.
Yeah, but not by enough, Jared.
Powering a single nanomachine makes way more sense. I'm giving this one a pass.
Okay, I accept the pass.
She discusses again that the nerve disruptor rounds aren't quite ready yet, but that they're working on finding a way to get past the Gurongi's regenerative abilities to be able to deal permanent damage, and somehow gunpowder's going to do this.
Yeah.
Conversation goes on a little more, but we cut to a street, and Dagava's just walking, and he's super blurry.
Yep. He's heading to the Gap.
Elsewhere.
It's the Gap. Elsewhere is the Gap.
Eventually.
Did you notice the news report running?
I didn't pay that much attention to it. Why would I when we have you here?
Well, imagine my shock.
You had that ready too, you son of a bitch.
Do you know how difficult it is to pay attention to every detail while still doing running commentary while only watching the episode once?
Yeah, I only do half those things and it's exhausting. I do the commentary, he does the watching.
Like, there's a reason that other podcasts talk about how they'll watch an episode like four times before they record their episode. We do it in one.
Mm-hmm.
We'll discuss this later.
Oh, God, we're getting scolded.
We're in trouble.
Never want to hear we'll talk about this later from our producer ever again.
Yeah, that triggered some millennial trauma in me right there, it did.
I remember them saying something about, like, the Minister of Trade and Commerce. Man.
Ah, yes, the Grongi's one weakness, the Minister of Trade and Commerce.
It's about how there have been some power outages.
Ah. Okay, so who walks up at that moment but...
Go Gadol Ba, portrayed by Gunji Masato. His name is derived from Kabutomushi, meaning rhinoceros beetle. Specifically, the Kabuto part.
Makes sense. I am always thrilled to hear how the Texas speech chooses to interpret some of these names. It doesn't ever disappoint.
Cool. I think we'd already figured out that he was a rhinoceros beetle.
Yeah. He's got the head crest and we just saw his little pinchy beats.
He's Heracross, if evil.
Team Rocket Heracross.
Yes. And Baruba does ask him about, has he managed to unlock this new power? He says that it's going to be what takes him into the finals. And then they discuss the problem of Kuga, and they're making up more words at this point, because I guess this round of the game has another name to it that they've never mentioned before this episode.
This is going to be another moment where he tells us we missed it.
Probably. I'm fine with that.
These are the same words they've used since Gamego.
Gegeru, yes. Zaragas Gegeru, yes. But he had another one that was like Gaspacho Zambara Gegeru? No, we haven't heard that word yet.
Yeah, Go Giga Gojulas Gegeru.
That's the semifinals.
You're the semifinals. So anyway, they said words we've never heard before or even hinted out ever in our lives.
And they're complaining that Kuga has stopped them. But what's the point of this? He's getting in the way of the game. It's not fun anymore. Why won't he just let us play?
So silly.
And Baruba comments that, once again, this Kuga, but also the Linto as a whole, have changed. Things are different compared to however long ago it was they did this the last time. But Gadol says that he's going to see Dagava in the finals. And Dagava's like, oh yeah?
All comms are open comms, even the fucking street.
And we turn and look, and the Gap is super blurry all of a sudden. And Dagava's standing there. He sounded like a child.
He did.
His voice is particularly high-pitched.
Very soft-spoken for a harbinger of ultimate darkness.
His actor, Urai Kenji, was 17 at time of recording.
Okay.
Love this. It's like shit-talking somebody that you didn't know was already logged into Discord. Yeah, I'm going to kick his ass in the finals. Are you sure about that?
And the screen gets super blurry, so presumably not even Godol can look at Dakuva.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just turns and walks away, because that's all Dakuva had to do was be like, I heard you. I will remember this.
Mm-hmm.
We cut back to police headquarters, and Godai, Ichijo, and Inakita are heading towards the elevator. And Inakita is discussing about how she's got to leave now because she's got to go make it to the parent-teacher day. And Godai's like, ah, yeah, that's a great smile for you to share with your kid. And that's really all that happens in this scene. They get on the elevator, they go down. We cut to Jonin University, and Sakurako is there just going through more stuff on the computer. Jean walks in. He's still wearing that suit jacket from last episode.
It's a good combination, you know?
It is.
Brings out the color of his highlights.
But he comes and asks what Sakurako's working on. She talks about how Godai's asked her to look for more information about getting stronger, and that Ichijo has asked for more information on Dakuva, and that she's doing her best, that she might have found some things that might lead towards answers, but she's not quite there yet. Jean goes over to his desk that's
being used as her storage cabinet.
Yes, presumably hers is so clean because she tosses everything onto his desk. And he starts going through, pulling stuff out, and she's like, what are you doing? And he's like, well, I thought I'd compile all this stuff and bring it over to Inakita, so I'm just trying to get everything together. We cut to a bridge, and Godol is just walking across it. The camera is at a Dutch angle. There's also a mirror that's been placed so that there is a lens flare straight at the camera. And he walks. Doldo is there. There's also another mirror, so a separate lens flare. And he's holding the weird little patch that the Go have been giving to him that's like their special set of rules on it. And Doldo asks if he's ready to begin. And Godol says yes, and that he's only going to use this new power he's acquired on those that try and fight him back.
Yeah, the fighting Linto, which is honestly, that's an exciting development, really, because, you know, the cops have never had a direct confrontation. They've always just kind of been in the way. So for one of the Grongi to actively go after them, they've really pivoted their opinion on how threatening the Linto and how threatening Kuga are in just the last few episodes.
Yeah. We started to see that some, I think as far back as Galma, I feel like we heard the first discussion about, hey, don't underestimate the Linto. These aren't the ones we dealt with before.
Yeah, but even then they were just scoffing at it.
But it's been played up more and more since then. To the fact that, you know, like, Zalazu, Doldo straight up said, you're underestimating the Linto's what's going to make you fail.
Yep, yep. I remember Baruba back during our first go, even voicing, this Kuga's not like the old Kuga, and the first go, like, just brushing it off, like, eh, whatever, it doesn't matter. Well, now they're all dead.
Yep. As they're talking, the camera pulls out so we see the whole bridge, and they've placed another mirror so there's an additional lens flare.
Truly the Michael Bay of bridges.
Yes.
That's what the bridge is over. The Michael Bay. If you cut that, I'll take your knees away from you.
Back at Jonin, Jean has continued to pile stuff together, and Sakurako makes a comment about, like, hey, if you try and get everything together, you're going to be here all day and you're not going to actually get to see her. And he's like, oh, yeah, you're right, and goes to place the packets that he has gathered on top of some other precariously balanced packages, and everything falls to the ground.
Oh, no.
So Sakurako gets up and walks around to the other side of the desk and bends down, starts picking stuff up, and Jean bends down because, you know, it's his mess and he should do his part to help pick it up as well. And as they're going through this, they stumble across a business card.
Aww.
Of Godai's. And it's one from the 1900s.
Not the year, the number of skills.
Yes, it was 1942?
Something like that.
I thought 64.
Yeah, 64 came to mind as well.
Less skills than now.
Yes.
In the 1900s.
Jean asks about the skills, and Sakura's like, oh, yeah, you know, he likes making people smile. And Godai comes in through the door.
That was honestly the most unsettling part of this whole episode.
Yeah, why didn't he climb in through the window? This isn't his normal method of ingress. But Sakurako turns and is like, hey, guess what we found? And she shows him Jean's card. And Godai's like, oh, yes, this skill. That means that was when I met you, Jean. And Sakurako's like, do you remember what was on my card? And Godai lists the number, and he's correct.
This is what happens when you max wisdom, zero intelligence, a character.
So they begin to talk, and Godai once again brings up the fact that the Go have been getting stronger and that he feels like he probably needs to get stronger himself. And Jean says something about, well, electricity made you stronger before, maybe we need to go back to that. And Godai's like, hey, I think you're onto something here. Yes.
They spent the rest of the afternoon trying to keep him away from the light sockets with forks.
Sakurako, having been so focused on this prophecy of ultimate darkness, it's like, are you sure you should be doing this? You know, more power? She doesn't say it, but I was surprised she didn't bring up, like, holy spring running dry, remember?
Harbinger of ultimate darkness. No, not ringing a bell. Okay.
Godai is now set on this path. So there is concern brought up that Godai is overdoing it again. Godai responds with, no, not overdoing it, just only as much as I can.
That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
No, that's exactly how this works. This is what is meant when people use the phrase giving 110%.
That's not how percents work.
You're going to have so much fun when we get to 01 and Thouser shows up.
Thouser?
Kamen Rider Thouser.
Like 1,000?
Yes. His catchphrase is that things are 1,000%.
But never in a way where 1,000% makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. I believe you immediately. It's like every time in Dr. Stone, he's 10,000,000,000% confident of this fact.
Yes. You know what? Sanku gets the pass for that. I genuinely believe he is able to comprehend those percentages.
You know what? He probably is.
He is single-handedly rebuilding the entire Earth civilization.
He remembered how long it had been since he was turned to stone because he kept count for 1,000 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sanku.
That's right. You decided not to watch Dr. Stone with me.
You silly, silly man. Yeah, no, the wife's a PA, so I actually had her watch Dr. Stone with me, and she loved it because one of her passions is chemistry. She loves chemistry. So seeing him go through all the chemistry and where, like, you can find different materials to make different things and cause different reactions, she was nerding out hardcore, and I loved it.
Back on track.
Yes, sir.
You're not my real dad.
We cut to outside the Tama West Police Department, and Gadol is once again just walking towards camera. This is becoming a motif of his.
Monty Python, the Holy Grail style.
Yes, it is like the invasion of that one castle. But as he walks up, the cop with a bow staff, for some reason, is just like, hey, stop. You can't go in there. All he's done is dressed up like the modern Major General and is walking towards her. Maybe he's wanting to report a robbery? Or
police, you know, in Japan aren't kind to theater majors, and he's looking awful theatery.
Oh, I was not aware of that particular national idiosyncrasy.
Yeah, you know.
You're making things up again.
Yeah, so it's just over here making blanket statements about cultural normatives. They also can't eat fruit. Pineapple's okay, it's an exception.
I'm going to choose not to just defer to you on this one. I think you're making that up.
I said it with a lot of confidence. So anyway, Gato walks up the policeman.
And yanks one of the tasseled things off of his chest fringe. It turns into a sword, and we see electricity arc off it, and it turns into an even bigger sword that seems to be shaped like a beetle.
This is Gadol's Herculean form. Like Jaza and Babel, this is equivalent with Rising Titan form.
That makes sense.
The fact that he just turned his sword into an even swordier sword.
I cannot help but now that I have thought about the idea of his sword being shaped like a Hercules beetle, being reminded of the one particular inquisitor who carries around a power axe shaped like a tiger.
I do like that.
You each have like 2 references.
I have like 4.
It's our common language. Why are you now judging us for it?
It's been 25 episodes.
Yeah, so why start now?
I think he's implying he's reaching critical mass on our particular idiosyncrasies.
Got it. We'll find new material for next season. We're not going to find new material for next season. You guys know what you signed up for by listening to us. Out on the street, Godai's just driving on his bike at this point, right? Ichijo calls and says that they've received reports of a new ULF attack. Godai's heading in that direction. We then cut to Ichikawa. Inokita is walking down the street, presumably heading towards the school to get to this meeting, when the phone rings. And it's Ichijo, and he starts off with, "I'm so terribly sorry to have to ask this of you." And we don't hear the rest of the conversation, but we once again get another gorgeous rack zoom focus on her.
Mm-hmm.
And she takes a moment and then finally says, "Nope, it's fine. I'll head in there immediately. Don't worry about it." And she turns around and just walking.
Yep. No parent-teacher conference for her today.
Nope. We cut back to now inside the Tama West Police Department. And there's a bunch of dead cops.
It was an unfortunate fireworks accident.
Apparently, because a lot of the bodies are just smoking.
Yeah, we've got burned clothing and little reefs of smoke rising off the different bodies.
And Doldo is counting. And he says he is impressed with what Godwall has done. We don't get the number for how many he's killed, but we do see him take all of the beads on one row of the abacus, swing them back, and move atop. So I think we finally have at least some indication on how this works.
Mm-hmm. Well, standard abacus, each one is 10 places, right? So, you know, once you move the top 9 times, the next one is one of the bottom, rack the back. So each one should be a different base 10.
But remember, the Garungi have like base 43.
Yeah, it's something weird like that, because we've seen them move an even number of crystals to represent an odd number of things.
I had forgotten and I hated anew.
We will never learn about Garungi mathematics. Somewhere, someone probably has the production Bible that talks about their system of mathematics. And if they're not already insane from having come up with that, they have locked this production Bible away lest someone find it and thus be driven insane.
Reading about Garungi mathematics is like reading The King in Yellow.
It correct.
Just, yep. Mm-hmm.
There, another reference for you.
It's an info hazard.
We cut to the street. Godai engines and continues driving. I like the way that they did this one with the focus on the belt, show it spinning, and then cut to him in full body armor. That's the best way to do the transformation while on the bike, I think.
Yeah, they finally got their stride in terms of making sure the transitions don't look over much campy. They seem to be pretty streamlined now.
Yeah. Nozomi radios stating about the massacre at the police department. And she states that Godel only killed the male officers?
Yeah. I'll be curious to see if that's a translation thing, just in terms of the way it was framed, or if he's specifically going for male police officers.
It seemed, at least initially, I thought, like, his aim was to go for people who would genuinely fight him and not just, you know, stand there and accept their own death.
Yeah, Predator rules. See? Fourth reference.
And we haven't seen any female officers in active combat roles in this show so far. We've seen them doing radio announcements and secretary work, and God, this is dated and I don't like it.
God, it was the year 2002. It's not even that long ago.
We've seen Nozomi and no one else.
It's not true. There was a Kanako. Was that her name? I thought she was a cop as well.
She was an archaeologist.
Damn it.
Womp womp.
Ichijo calls in on the comms as well and says that Inokita's rushing back to finish working on the nerve disruptor bullets. And yeah, we see her just running down the street. We hear the clop of her heels, but did you notice the, like, shrubbery in front so that we didn't actually see her feet?
Yep. Yep.
They added that in post.
They might have, honestly.
No, I'm positive they ADR'd in the sound of her shoes on the pavement.
Oh, you don't think she Bryce Dallas Howarded it and just went into a dead sprint in heels? Sixth reference.
Baruba might have, but no. If Inakita was going to do that, they'd have shown it. Nozomi also, during this whole thing, is encouraging all officers, one, to not only be on guard, but to head towards the abandoned factory that has been designated it's the spot for Kuga to kill Gadol at.
Apparently, the parking garage they converted was a one-time deal.
Yeah. As luck would have it, we then cut to that particular abandoned factory. And after last week's quarry, it's nice to be back in familiar territory. And Gadol is slowly, menacingly walking towards the cops.
Gaggle. It's a gaggle. I thought
the one plainclothes cop was somehow Godai for a moment because they have similar haircuts.
This is Gadol's grapple form, equivalent to Rising Mighty form.
On his way in, as he's riding in on his bike, he sees like a handgun on the ground and he goes,
I was going to get to that. Yeah. He sees handgun on the ground. He dives for it.
Free gun. Yay.
Grabs it. Continues on. Sees Gadol ahead. Switches into regular Pegasus form. Obviously, it's because he doesn't want to risk killing the cops. But surely he's got to know this isn't going to work.
No.
But he pulls the plunger back. It's Nerf or nothing, baby. And the last, like, 8 to 10 seconds of the episode are this weird slow motion of the blast Pegasus shot that looks like a spectral bird for some reason.
As we slowly zoom out.
And that's where this episode ends.
Also, shout out to the group of, like, 5 police officers just scared, gaggling back towards the one piece of structure behind them when they could clearly scatter in every direction because there's nothing to the sides.
Correct. But hey, at least they're all like hitting center mass because we do see the rain of bullets just dropping from Godwall's body.
But those are the old war crimes. You need war crime plus.
Are they the old, the new, or the new? Because I think at this point we're on the new war crime bullets.
They're at least one generation of war crimes behind.
That's why they're not having any effect on Heracross here.
Tisk tisk.
A2 Jared.
I'm allowed to every now and then. I don't have to exclusively refer to them by their actual names.
Yeah, I like Heracross. And that's a Pokemon reference. That's 6.
You said 6 already.
I said 6 already, but it was actually 5, because I'm good at reference, but not at math.
How about we just get to part 2?
I'm excited.
No fear, no pain.
You know, 3-parters are always iffy, because one part... Typically, part 2 is going to be like, is this not so good? But this is a pretty solid part 2 for this 3-parter, I think.
Yeah, you're always looking for the Kevin head.
So we start off right where we left off, only this time properly sped instead of in super slow motion. Godai fires the blast Pegasus into the back of Gadol. The cops finally take this moment to run in a direction other than backwards.
Yeah, and the Vikavolt does about as much damage as shooting a spitball at him.
I mean, this wasn't the Vikavolt. This was just standard Nerf gun. And rightly so, Gadol turns around and is like, really? This is what you're gonna do?
Did you throw something at me?
And we get kind of a cool thing here, because this is the first time we've seen Gadol's eyes change color to indicate what form he's going into. And his eyes shift to green.
Gadol's shooting form is unsurprisingly similar to Rising Pegasus form.
Wait, so we've got a Herculean form, a grappling form, a shooting form? I think we could have done better on these naming conventions.
They aren't saying them anyways. Why put in the effort?
Fair enough, yeah, it's just in the manual. But Gadol reaches up, pulls off another one of the tassel things, and it turns into his... It's a crossbow.
Yeah, it's like a bolt thrower type deal.
And... He takes a couple shots. We go to the opening credits. We cut to the Research Institute. Ninakita's run in, and an assistant there is like, hey, by the way, phone call for you. They want you to call them back.
Boo.
She's like, it's my mom, isn't it? All right, fine. And she calls home, and grandma is like, why didn't you go to school? Is there really another ULF attack? We're doing this? Really? As if she has any control over this.
Yeah, Gam Gam's insufferable this episode. I'm sorry. I have sympathy for the kid, but the grandma needs to step off.
She points out that Sayuru didn't even go to school today and that he has locked himself in Inakita's room. And all Inakita can say is like, look, I've got to do this, but I'll try and be as fast as I can. I will call you back. At the factory, Godai starts off just dodging shots from shooter form. And then he grabs a stick. And typically in the past, when he grabs a stick, that means he's going into dragon form. Well, I guess he already was in dragon form to dodge.
No, Jared, this was a thick stick.
Ayo!
He goes into titan form.
And does to Gadol as Gadol does to others by slowly walking towards him while ignoring what he's doing.
Now, it is worth noting that when he gets shot, even in titan form, he staggers back for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
But as is oft to happen, Godai gets close enough to disarm with the sword. And so, in response, or no, not yet.
Meanwhile,
we see Doldo up on a bit of scaffolding.
Yeah, he's up on the catwalks above one of the tanks in the abandoned warehouse district.
And he's disappointed, because he says, like, well, I guess Godo will continue the game once he's dealt with Kuga. And as he goes to turn and walk away, a shot rings out, and the abacus breaks.
That is so rude. Doldo had one thing. One thing.
And he looks over, and on another bit of scaffolding across a distance, there's Ichijo with his high-powered gun.
Oh no, he's hot!
Oh, he's just got a commanding presence. And a pretty face.
Oh no, he's hot!
I know, there's no dissuading you from this.
This is where Doldo transforms, right?
This is where Doldo transforms for the first time.
The opposite of hot. He turned into a butt-faced bird monkey.
He's very much a Tengu. And like Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Season 3 Tengu Warrior Tengu. Only less colorful. Because he's just black and white. He doesn't have the purple. I want to see a mashup where it turns out Daguva is actually Ivan Ooze.
The ooze is loose. His face looks like one of those proboscis monkeys.
Yes.
And now I'm not going to be able to unsee that.
His Gurangi form is pretty rough.
It's bad. It's just bad.
He charges across at Ichijo, knocks him over the railing. Ichijo is just hanging on, trying to get his second hand to grip onto something. Doldo leaves, because why would he bother trying to confirm that the man who actually hurt him is dead?
No, no, no.
We cut back to the fight, and Godai does Calamity Titan to Gadol. And this is maybe one of the coolest things we've seen in this show.
Oh, it got me for sure.
Because Gadol looks down and is like, really? Let me show you how it's done. And he grabs the Titan sword and
bitch slaps Godai.
Turns it into his Herculean form sword and then pulls it out of him. It is one thing to take another man's weapon. It's something else entirely to be like, your sword wasn't big enough.
Ayo!
Now, let me remove it from myself.
Ayo!
Oh man, there's a lot of subtext here.
And he starts swinging, and this is possibly the fastest Titan form has moved in this show. And it's still not enough, and oh, man, I've said it before so many times, I love seeing battle damage on Kuga's armor.
Yeah, and the transformation for Gadol between his normal form into his Titan form equivalent was really cool.
Yes, what they're doing with Gadol is fantastic.
Yeah, this is as good as the last transforming Grongi were bad.
I will agree with that statement.
Mm-hmm.
Godai gets slashed across the front of the chest. He gets one of his shoulder pads cleaved off.
Another good practical effect.
And then he takes a full swing just to the back. Gadol goes for the kill. Godai rolls away, switches into Mighty Kuga, then goes into Rising Mighty. And Ichijo is still there. Other cops presumably are within the blast radius.
At the very least, Sugita.
Godai.
Sugita does mention when he and Ichijo are talking that everybody else is cleared out. It's just the two of them and Godai.
Godai goes to do his Rising Mighty kick. He makes contact. Gadol shakes it off.
God, not even shakes. It just fades. He doesn't do like a cool flex. He just kind of stands there and then the symbol just fades away.
this is intense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. Gamego, Bada, no one survives Rising Mighty Kick. And for it to just fade, what level of power is Godol on?
This guy's taken a Calamity Stab and a kick in the space of about 30 seconds.
It was regular Calamity Titan, not Rising, but...
Still.
And the Blast Pegasus. Yeah. He's taken three finishers.
God, that Blast Pegasus might as well have been a rubber band gun, though.
And a normal Mighty Kick to his hand.
Oh yeah, there was the first Mighty Kick as well, so he's taken two kicks.
And just hasn't cared.
We briefly cut back to see that Ichijo, somehow, pulled himself up from the scaffolding back onto the platform. Kinda would have been cool to see that, but no. And Sugita runs up saying that he saw the whole thing. Good on you, Sugita. And yes, Sugita proceeds to say that all the other cops have made it away safely, that it's just the two of them and Godai, and that they need to get ready to do something. And Sugita and Ichijo hype themselves up, gasping for breath, stand back up and go to move, and we cut back down. And Godol is like, let me show you how to use that power. And his eyes go gold. And he once again shifts forms.
This is Godol's Shocker form. It's equivalent to something we will see later. The name Shocker is of course a reference to the evil organization from the original Kamen Rider series.
I was gonna say that. So yeah, man, his feels weird to say, but his Shocker form looks so cool. And he goes to do the kick.
Yeah, he gives Godai the Shocker.
His foot on fire. He runs, he jumps, and he spins. It is a drill kick.
Yeah, he turns into a freaking excadrill.
And Godai goes flying back, crashes through a shed that then comes down on top of him. He comes out of the wreckage, staggering. I half expected a symbol to appear on his chest.
I wanted it. That would have been a good moment.
He tries to strike a stance, and he shifts to growing form. And when he collapses to the ground, he's completely demorphed. And
bleeding from the nose.
Yes. Godol chooses not to kill him.
That's two misses this episode. Because Doldo could definitely have finished off Ichijo.
We cut back to the Research Institute, and the researchers are putting a bullet in the microwave.
Try your own science at home, kids. Don't fucking do that.
It is incredibly important we make this abundantly clear. Do not do that. Do not put ammunition in the microwave.
Don't put anything, even metal smelling, in the microwave.
Yeah. So the bullet blows up, and they're testing to see what the delay was, because apparently they have two different types of gunpowder, and it's 1.67 seconds. And they comment that this isn't good enough. They need it to get to 0.3 seconds or less.
Yeah, so you're right. They're making mass reactive ammo.
Ichijo calls, asking Akita how's it going, and she's like, I'm working on it. We're doing it as fast as we can. We're not there yet. We cut to Jonin. Sakurako's at her computer, and Jean is getting ready to leave. And Sakurako wishes him good luck. Because
I can see what's happening.
She sees all, even if she doesn't always comment on it. And John's like, what do you mean, good luck? I'm not trying to go on a date with Inakita. Why are you sweating? I'm not sweating.
Is it sweaty in here? It's sweaty in here.
And there's some more conversation. That the big takeaway from this is that this is the first time someone really states that they are concerned about Godai's smile. They once again bring up the he's overdoing it just as much as he can, and that they should do the same.
You know what? We really should burn this candle at both ends.
We then cut to a indoor pool, and Baruba and Dagava are there having a conversation, and apparently Baruba's the only one who can look at him and see what he looks like, because things aren't blurry.
That was interesting, how it's just the two of them in that bathhouse, and there's none of the hazing.
White rooms are so good to play with colors like this blue light.
Yes.
One of those lighting effects that actually worked really well, yeah.
Baruba comes in saying that she thinks that Godol is going to win his game. And Dagava's like, oh, Kuga could still kill him. So they talk some more, and Baruba asks if Godol fails, is Dagava going to start the ultimate darkness himself? And he responds with, that sounds like fun.
You know what? I could make some time in my schedule for bringing about the end of things and harbinging some darkness. Yeah.
We cut to Polpol. Pops and Nana are there when who should come in but Minori and Keiko. And Pops makes a somewhat off-color comment in regards to Keiko being pregnant.
Says she looked like a sumo wrestler.
Yeah. Asked how the baby's doing. Nana also mentions that she got a postcard from her dad asking if she's coming home for New Year's Eve. Kanto Medical University. Godai comes in on a stretcher. Tsubaki, being, I'm guessing, the head of this, of course, is there. Let's get him into a room. At Setagaya Ward, Ichijo's driving. He gets a radio call from Sakurai informing us that Godol killed over 100 officers in 10 minutes.
Staggering there were that many police officers at that one precinct location.
Yeah, it didn't seem like a particularly large precinct, but... No. Ichijo deduces that that means that cops are the targets and therefore they are at risk.
Has Godol's number been mentioned yet?
No.
No? Okay.
No. Sakurai asks about Godai. Ichijo says that he got hurt real bad, that he's been taken to Kanto Medical University. Sakura's like, so what do we do in the meantime? And Ichijo's like, well, you know, we've been through this before. He'll make it back. It will take more than this to kill Godai. We cut to a ice skating rink, a hockey arena.
Hockey arena, yeah.
And Baruba, Doldo, and Godol are just there, I don't know, because...
So they're all standing there when we get there, but...
Well, Godol is once again walked up.
Yeah, that was what I was going to comment on. He walks awfully confident on ice. You know, nobody's slipping, nobody's sliding. It's very impressive.
And he asks if his game is going to resume. They say yes, however, he's starting over. Doldo pulls out the broken piece of abacus, and Baruba explains that Alinto managed to hurt Doldo and damage the abacus, and because we have no record of the kills you've done, and we can't take yours or Doldo's word for it, we're starting over.
Yeah, Doldo can't do math in his head.
And Godol says, very well, I'll start from the beginning. However, Doldo, I'm going to kill you for wasting my time. And Doldo goes, oh, very well.
All right.
And Baruba just sort of turns and leaves, being like, yep, this is allowed to happen. And they square off against each other. Godol's eyes turn blue, and he pulls off another one of the charm things, and it turns into a bident.
This is Godol's last, but not final form, quick form, equivalent to rising dragon form.
So you say there's a final form?
That'd be shocker form.
Excellent. No, I do love the utilization of the design space of mirroring each one of Kuga's forms with a villain. I assume we get that with Dagava, but it's neat to see it in his lieutenant.
It's also worth noting that Doldo pulls off two bits from his fringe as well, and they turn into tonfas. We cut to the Research Institute. There's a quick montage of some machinery moving around and doing some things, and then we see Inakita with a single bullet, and she once again puts it into the microwave.
Yeah, she was actually hand-pressing those rounds. That's what that machine was, is it's one of the machines that actually compacts the rounds, so she was doing it herself.
I know it's not a microwave, but I'm just going to say she puts it in the microwave.
Yep, she takes the bullet out of the press, puts it in the microwave, sets it to 30 seconds. Inukita is the kind of type A personality who actually types buttons on her microwave. Like, if she needs to microwave something for 3 minutes, she presses 300. She's not the kind to just hit add 30 seconds 8 times.
Again, do not actually put ammunitions in the microwave.
Yes, don't put anything metal in the microwave.
Kids, ask your parents to help you with the microwave.
It blows up. And she turns and looks at her assistants, is like, well, and the computer runs its data, 0.27. It is under the 0.3 threshold. There's congratulations, celebrations, presumably someone's going to go get champagne. And the weight of the horrors she is about to bring to humanity suddenly comes crashing down on her. Because Inakita is suddenly distraught.
Yeah, she has a full-blown cold light of day moment.
And further emphasizing this, we cut to the Inakita household and see that Sayuru is just in the fetal position on the floor in her bedroom. Everything is a mess. Guessing the door is locked and Grandma doesn't have a key because she's just asking him to come out of the room so they can have lunch together.
All I could hear in my head was, "Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Hello, darkness, my old friend."
Yeah, that.
At the hospital, Godai is laying there. Tsubaki is now standing over him when who should come in but Sakurako. She asks how he's doing, and he says that Godai's healing abilities at this point are miraculous, that he's going to make a full recovery. And Sakurako's like, "I need to ask you something. It's for Godai's benefit, not mine." And she asks him to shock Godai again, that he needs another power-up, and that he is overdoing it just as much as he can. And Tsubaki, having now heard a new excuse for him to commit such wonders.
I'm so tired.
Be like Godai, take a nap.
And Tsubaki's like, "Well, I guess I better overdo it to the best of my ability as well."
And he goes off to overclock his defibrillator.
We cut to Ichijo driving on the street. Nozomi calls in over the radio saying that the tracking round has worked and they've been able to pinpoint the location of Doldo.
I had already forgotten that Ichijo was using the tracking rounds. I thought he just shot him, but even better.
She also says that the nerve disruptor rounds are ready and are heading towards him. Ichijo, wiping a single tear from his eye because he is so happy, says, "Hey, make sure you tell Inokita thank you.
You're making things up again."
Listen, if they can leave out 90% of the substance context in the manual, we can add our own pieces of flair to characters.
Inokita is now sitting in, like, the atrium of the Research Institute.
Still contemplating her place in the universe.
She is having a full breakdown at this point. I don't know if it is the weight of her sins or what.
Now I am become Inokita, destroyer of worlds.
Who should walk up at that point? But Jean,
destroyer of worlds? Speaker of French, eater of plums? His monikers aren't as nice.
And he goes with, like, the worst opening line imaginable. Because she asks, "What are you doing here?" And he's like, "Well, now that our joint GORAM research is done, I wanted to bring you back your reference materials."
Could have been worse. He could open with, "I came to see how neglecting your son is going."
You're right. That would have been worse.
I can always find a worse opening line.
And he sits down and asks her what's wrong, and we cut back to the hospital.
Meanwhile, back at what's wrong,
Tsubaki is getting ready to, overclock his defibrillator, when suddenly the EKG monitor starts flatlining. How convenient. We were going to do this anyways, but now we have a reason to.
Look at that, a reasonable excuse to experiment.
Guilt-free.
He's just over there with the defibrillator pads, like, pressing it against the couch or some shit.
"You say this."
I mean, he was saying that Godai's healing was miraculous, that he was going to be fine, and then suddenly he's flatlining? This is convenient. This is Godai being like, "Yes, please shock me."
Oh, God, he's got that Goku level of even unconscious, he's an annoying problem child.
And Tsubaki says to the now once again dying Godai, "Let's see your smile after this power up."
God, how go your ass to Arkham Asylum was that comment? "Let's see you smile after this, corpse."
What the fuck? Heavens to Murgatroyd. We've got one episode left. I am so excited for this. Ew. Is Doldo going to be killed by Godol?
Honest to God, I would be thrilled if Doldo just beat the snot out of him with his little corncob tonfas.
I would not know how to feel if it happened the other way around, and yes, Doldo kills Godol.
I would buy in completely at that point. Doldo then goes and whoops the monkey snot out of Dagiva, and when fucking Kuga shows up to the final fight, it's just this ugly ass-faced chimp bird with corncob tonfas being like, "Yes, come to me."
I don't think that's what's going to happen, but I kind of want to see the world where it did.
We can stop the series right now. That's the ending. We're good.
Let's get to this last episode.
No fear, no pain.
Wow. Just wow.
I'm excited. For a second there, I thought Doldo was going to take out Guttle, but yeah, we can get after it.
Yeah, so we start the episode back at the hospital, and Tsubaki very quickly confirms that Godai stopped his own heart to force him to defibrillate.
What the fuck?
He was gonna get that power up one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, Sakuraku had already convinced Tsubaki to go through with it, but you know what? Why not just make it an obligation at this point?
We're just gonna force the issue. Which, it's such a Godai action. Like, you have to save my life, but I get my power up. It's a positive thing for everyone. And in return,
I'll be able to save you.
Exactly.
And there's a wonder about how powerful do you think you are now? And Godai just springs out of bed as if he is hyper-caffeinated. And he talks about how great he feels and that he thinks he's going to be able to unlock even new powers that he hasn't dreamed of yet. And with that enthusiasm, let's go into this week's Trope of Satsu. Electricity can do anything.
You know what? I believe it can.
The show is proof positive. Twice. Before Benjamin Franklin, electricity was the magic of the gods. We don't know what this stuff is, but it comes down from the heavens. And after Benjamin Franklin, well, you know, electricity is still basically magic in fiction.
I mean, the understanding of it is still so foreign to us as members of the lay people that it might as well be magic. I mean, let's be honest. We stretch certain rocks really thin and then we run molecules not through them, but just connected to them. And that makes the molecules at your house agitated. Now you can watch Kamen Rider Kuga.
It's true. Magic rock, put the right runes on it, hit it with some lightning magic, and it work.
You ever want to really have your mind blown? Do a little bit of digging, not to go all like Joe Rogan, but like do a little bit of research. Electricity doesn't flow through cables. Like there aren't electrons flowing along those lines. Once two points are connected, they're just energetically synced. But there is no actual flow of any particles or waves down the length of that line. It's really, really weird and obscure. Mm-hmm.
Now for funsies, I'm just going to read off a few things that lightning or electricity has managed to do in fiction.
Oh, I'm so excited for this.
Make a sentient computer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Is that the one with the little robot? Oh, there's several. Oh, never mind. War Games.
Johnny Five from Short Circuit.
I even made the, Johnny, even made the Johnny Five reference.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Turn a helpful AI evil.
Oh, yep. That's a common one. Like that one.
Time travel. Lots of time travel.
Thank you, Doc Brown.
Reality hopping.
With lightning? Oh, yeah. There are a couple of those out there, too.
Literally creating life.
Okay, that might have happened, though. We haven't gone far enough back. We don't know. It could create life.
True, but, you know, also hyper-sped up life.
That's also valid.
Changing people's personalities?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Bestowing superpowers.
Oh, that's the dream, though.
It's true. Either that or radiation. One of these has got to give me superpowers.
Radiation failed for me, so I only have one option left.
I'm sorry, buddy.
No, Jetty. Man, common misconception. You have to irradiate the spider and then let the spider bite you. You can't just do the radiation direct. You gotta have an intermediary.
And you can't eat the spider either.
Yeah, we've tried that.
Producer's note. The commentary track does not condone getting struck by lightning, radiating spiders, or any other experiments not supervised by professionals. Even for superpowers.
And of course, you know, to add to this list, in Kuga, it has supercharged his ancient magical belt twice.
With no explanation as to how.
Nope. Magic, maybe meteor rock in belt, suck up lightning juice good.
So I do love this trope in particular because it's not just electricity, right? It's anything the general public has a vague enough understanding of to attribute magical properties to. Like toxic waste was another one where toxic waste could be used for anything. They were exposed to toxic waste, and now we have three-assed velociraptors roaming the Montana countryside. Radiation is another one that we see a lot. Cosmic rays have been used, and most recently,
nanobots.
Nanobots also. Genetic modification. Like, genetic modification is another electricity thing where it's just like, how did that happen? Radiation and nanobots that are radioactive.
I mean, yeah. You know, if you've played any sort of Metal Gear Solid game ever, according to Hideo Kojima, nanobots can do anything. But yeah, it all stems back from lightning can do anything, or electricity can do anything. the show, while not outright saying it, very heavily implies, particularly with Godol's last line, that he purposefully electrocuted himself to harness the same power. Because he says, let me use the power that the Linto created. Which means the Gronki didn't know what lightning was.
Electricity. They probably have a frame of reference for lightning.
That's fair. Dagova shoots it out of his hands.
Like Emperor Palpatine, he does.
Or Lord Raiden.
Yeah, he was the cause of those power outages.
Dagova was?
No, Godol, soaking up so much power, he was causing outages.
Oh, yeah, so he was just out there grabbing Transformers and shit.
Was it Infinity War, where Thor is holding the tooth connections and just a huge blast of solar radiation?
Yeah.
Think that.
That, but just two Transformers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
God, Godol's so cool.
Was.
Was.
Hashtag it. F's in chat.
Godai leaves, and they just let him. Because he's miraculously healed. He was never in any danger anyways. He stopped his own fucking heart. He would have started it back up again if they'd been like, oh, they're not taking the bait.
You know, that's honestly what Tsubaki probably spends most of his time doing, is filling out all the paperwork from Godai leaving the hospital without doing it himself. Because there's a lot of paperwork in the hospital.
It's true. I didn't discharge him, but guess I did. Huh. Discharge. Electricity. We cut back to the arena, and Ichijo is slowly stealthing his way in, when all of a sudden, Godol.
Karate chop.
And very shortly after, Doldo. And surprise, surprise, Doldo's whooping Godol.
Yeah, I didn't expect it. I expected him to get his bird ass shook, but no, he lands a couple of cool martial arts moves, jump kicks and shit.
He sends Godol flying back into a pillar. No one, not even Kuga, has been able to hurt him this much.
Yep.
This is terrifying that the scorekeeper is this strong.
Godol even says, like, I expected no less from Allah.
Yeah. So I guess, yeah, they're higher power and are only not doing anything since they're the rule keepers or the judges of the game. Their fight's pretty cool.
It honestly is. To a degree I did not expect.
From there, we cut back to the Research Institute, and Inakita is now laying out for Jean and us, the audience, what's going on in her head. It boils down to the pressure that she has been under at work, and the criticism from her mother and others presumably has finally caught up with her, and she can't take it anymore. It ends with her saying that she's a terrible mother.
Having a breakdown in front of Jean is not where you want to find yourself.
He does a pretty good job consoling her.
Does.
Honestly, for a plum-obsessed French weirdo, he's got a surprising amount of emotional intelligence.
We do briefly cut back to the hospital. This is the moment where Godai leaves. I jumped the gun there. They blur together. Out on the street, Godai hears the radio announcement about the ULFs being found at the arena and the attempts to clear the area, because now they're just going to blow the arena up. Back to the arena. Outside, Sugita and Sakurai have shown up. Ichijo has come out. He's informing them of what has been going on inside when a bike courier shows up. He has the war crimes. The newest, most war crimey war crimes.
The war crimiest.
Mass reactive shells.
I honestly expected him to just be showing up to deliver a spare bike for Godai.
They open the 10. They start divvying the bullets out amongst themselves.
Ichijo only gets 4. That's a mistake.
We cut to Popol, and once again, they're talking about this picture of Mount Everest, and they reveal that apparently the photo was taken by Pops' mentor.
Who was the siblings Godai's dad?
So that's why they're so thoroughly connected.
Yes, which now makes sense why when their father died, Godai took to Pops so much. And there's discussion about how he would be gone for long stretches of time and they wouldn't see him, but that every 2 weeks, like clockwork, he would send a letter. And that kept them going. And Minori brings up that he would sign his letters off with something that at the time she didn't understand, but now it makes more sense to her for the sake of everyone's smiles.
I love the fact that the family's Godai basically had the same relationship with their father from Hunter x Hunter. just off somewhere, having adventures, sending letters.
Well, I mean, we do know for a fact he died in Afghanistan. They did state that.
He was a war photographer.
That makes sense. That math checks out.
That's even more tragic.
Yeah.
But it is him that inspired Pops' sense of adventure, and his legacy and Pops that sparked Godai's sense of adventure, and carrying on the family legacy of For the Sake of Everyone Smiles. Back to the Research Institute, Inakita has finished up her bit, and Jean takes a moment and goes, "Hey, did your son tell you that you're a horrible mom and that he hates you? Or is it just other people who are saying these things?"
Maybe we're projecting a little bit our own insecurities.
And she's like, "What does this have to do with it?" And we get Jean lore.
We've waited this many episodes.
This is episode 46, and he was introduced in, what, episode 3?
So
something like that.
43 episodes to just pine for the Jean backstory that we're all here for.
And he says that both of his parents were workaholics, very similar to Inakita. And while he missed them terribly, he never hated them. It was sad, but...
Yeah, they died in a tragic croissant-making incident. I'm French. I'm allowed to say that.
I'm sorry to get so off track with this, but have you heard about the French farming protests that are going on right now?
Yes.
Man, no one protests like the French protests.
Nobody. It was the fuel cost bill. There was a dude just wandering around with a rock saw, you know, the thing they use to cut concrete, just cutting open ATMs around Paris, not taking anything. When the French protest, it's a felt phenomenon, and they'll do it over nothing.
I always think of when the firefighters protested and they were lighting themselves on fire and charging the police barricades.
Yep.
Man.
I'm fireproof. You're not.
Anyways.
Hellboy reference. 18.
Fine. I apologize for my outboist.
You are forgiven for your outboist.
All is good. Jean does his best to cheer Inakita up. They talk some more. Her resolve seems to be straightening. Jean tells her that, hey, you need to hold on to your grip on sanity, effectively, for the sake of your son. Because if you break, if you fall to despair like this, then he will come to hate you. But as long as you keep your resolve, it's going to be okay. And she kind of gets behind it and gives like a fist pump. It looks like, once again, Inakita forgot, no, sweetie, it's the thumbs up.
Neither one of them have ever been particularly on board with the thumbs up.
But Jean is now, as of last episode.
Yeah, but it's taken how many episodes? They're doing their best. They don't have Godai to cue off of.
Back at the arena, Ichijo, Sugito, Sakurai, get ready to go in. We get one more quick shot of the fight between Doldo and Godol, and Godol just rips part of Doldo's wing off.
Mm-hmm. Doldo tries to do like a bird person flyby kick, and Godol just grabs him out of the air.
Doldo decides he's had enough at this point. He's going to leave. Baruba, watching this from the top of an escalator, then comments that she smells Linto warriors. Doldo goes flying out, happens to, you know, speed right over the three police officers.
Ka-ka!
And Ichijo tells Sugita and Sakurai to go after him. He's going to go in and take care of Godol.
Got to admire that confidence.
Yeah. One more time back to the Research Institute. Inakita's feeling better now. And there's some enthusiastic, like, I don't remember exactly what was said. I remember the mood of it.
Yeah. That's what's really important, honestly, is this renewed sense of optimism she has about both her job and her relationship with her son.
And she's excited, and she does say something to Jean about the fact of, oh, and there's one more thing you can help me with. And she's bouncing as she says it. That does seem to be the implication.
That staff closet gets a hole.
That dressing room.
Yeah. You know, either way, find a dark hole in a building.
Hey-o!
Monster fucker.
We cut back to the arena, and Ichijo is walking through the stadium seating. In another universe where Godol is much more of a showman, a single light would have turned on right in the middle, and he'd have been standing there.
I'm now imagining, like, a top hat large enough to fit over his helmet and armor plating and, like, a cane.
All that you need is White Soul from Ryu Soldier. Oh, we'll have to show you pictures, but
yeah, I'll need
he has a top hat built into his head sculpt. He carries a cane. He's the best villain I've ever seen.
Yep, Jared has a type.
Not in love with him.
But sure, Jan.
Every moment he's on screen is a joy.
Who are you trying to convince, us or yourself?
The audience, mostly. But no, Godel comes around from just slightly off screen and backhands Ichijo.
No surprise.
And as Ichijo goes falling backwards down the stairs, he aims up and he fires. And it seems that the nerve disruptor bullets have done their job, because Godel goes down.
He drops like a sack of potatoes.
Ichijo looks over to the right. Baruba's there. We cut to a creek bed? A river? I guess Sugita and Sakurai have just been hoofing it, chasing after Doldo. But they finally draw their guns, and they shoot. And his belt doesn't explode, but it does light up like it's fizzling out.
Yeah, no, he just dies.
He spins and collapses face first into the water.
If these bullets block the nerve impulses that cause their healing, that feels right. Like, we don't expect science from the Kuga show. You know, it's karate fighting bug men. Blocking somebody's regenerative abilities honestly mean they could be killed like any other person. So he literally just got shot to death. And important to note, this is all being underscored by the conversation that Baruba and Ichijo are having about how the Linto have changed from a species that didn't have a word for warrior to now be engineering weapons where even the least of these can take out the greatest of those. It's one of those danger of what you could become moments. I love that. I felt that when it was showing just two cops that have been along for the ride taking out a law-level bad guy with their firearms.
I mean, it feels somewhat appropriate given that particularly since Bada, they have had an increased presence in the show. Yeah, I'm shocked, but at the same time, it does feel right that they get this moment.
And I even appreciate that choice, right? Just two dudes and they shoot one of our monsters to death. Like, that hit home.
It was a powerful moment. I know you already ranked him, but do you have a bit here in regards to Doldo being dead?
The only thing that's changed is I would mash him harder.
Cool. Moving on. Back at the arena, yes, we have had this conversation, and Baruba says at this point, there's basically no distinction between the Linto and Garongi anymore. That if they're capable of this, they're equals. And Ichijo stands up. Guess he's got one bullet left, and he aims it at Baruba. Only Godel's not quite dead yet.
Yeah, they had us the first half, I'm not gonna lie.
And he gets up and grabs the gun, throws Ichijo down to the arena floor.
Throws him a lot better this time.
Jumps down.
We should have seen it come.
I was trying to get one last line in before that moment, but yeah. Bike, bitch slap, Godel.
And we cut away to a different scene to cover the fact that they fought far enough to get away from the arena and out into a forest thicket.
Well, no, before they do, Ichijo mentions that there is a thicket, that if they can try and get Godel there, it should be safe, but he's going to go try and evacuate people. Godai, do what you need to do. And then we cut to the single most French scene in this show, because it is just Jean and Inakita on a bike going down the street. It's rainy. It's dark. Jean has a scarf because, you know, Kamen Rider, motorcycles and scarves are a thing. But it is a piece of French cinema for this one moment.
Is it a motorcycle or is it a scooter?
Either way, it's the most French thing.
Yeah. Moped's just like 3% more French.
We then cut to the thicket. Do need to mention, when Godai Henshined, he went straight into Rising Mighty, and said that he can keep this now.
This is our Super Saiyan 2. It's virtually identical to Super Saiyan 1, but we can maintain it indefinitely.
Producer's note, this was recorded before news of Akira Toriyama's passing. May he rest in peace.
So in the woods, we've got our Rising Mighty, Kuga, Godel. They start fighting a bit. All of the fights with Godel have been great.
Yeah.
And he decides to go into his shocker form again. And Godai Chōhinshin And the armor turns black.
This is Kuga's amazing mighty form, with the punching power of 40 tons, kicking power of 75 tons, and a max jump height of 45 meters. Its finishing move is the amazing mighty kick. It is equivalent to Gadol's shocker form.
They called it the amazing mighty kick.
I mean, it's amazing mighty form. Yeah, why not?
I don't know. I was expecting some name for the new form like Superior Kuga or Ultimate Kuga.
This is not Ultimate Kuga yet.
Oh, there's more.
Ultimate Kuga comes with Dagova.
Okay, I take it back. I'm willing to admit when I'm wrong. I do like this arm.
This form looks so cool because it is matte black with the gold trim, and they've purposely shot it in the dark, and when the eyes light up.
Can't emphasize how much I like the matte black with the gold trim. All of our other forms have been like candy shell type gloss. This one is chef's kiss.
It's a fantastic form. I think this might actually replace Rising Titan as the best looking armor we've seen. But they both charge. They both kick. Admittedly, the mid-air clash doesn't read super well to me. They both hit the ground and are just laying there.
Yeah, they kind of grazed past each other and like clipped each other in the chest a bit. The momentum past each other trope works really well for like swords and weapons, but when it's two direct impact attacks...
Because it should be more of like a hit and both fall straight down.
Yeah.
Godai is laying there, non-responsive. Gadol finally slowly stands back up. It looks like he might be triumphant when all of a sudden he hunches over and grabs his stomach.
And it do begin to glow with not one, but two symbols.
He finally stands up, and once again we see the energy streak down into the belt, and another massive fire tornado. This one is like Book of Exodus, pillar of fire from the heavens.
Or like the Witch King calls the Nazgul back.
It is the Monster Mash. The Monster
Mash. I can't wait to hear this one.
I do like the strong silent type, and he looks like he could go for a while. He is on the serious side, but he also knows how to cut loose. But that hair, I wouldn't be able to keep a straight face. Mash the beetle, pass the man.
Okay.
That sounds like an old proverb. Oh, you know, mash the beetle, pass the man. Nothing about a man in uniform?
That hair.
It outdoes the uniform.
Sash be damned, look at that comb over.
We cut to an apartment complex, and Jean and Inakita pull up. She thanks him, goes inside. Jean doesn't immediately leave.
He lurks outside for the whole conversation.
Yeah. Not only that, he does at least park the bike and then goes and walks up and waits outside the apartment door listening.
That's the most French thing done this episode.
It's creepy. But so Inakita comes into the house and starts talking through the door to Sayuru.
Yeah, the bedroom door. She's not talking to John through the front of her house.
Yeah, no, she's... talking to Sayuru through the bedroom door. Jean is, however, at the front door listening in.
Do you want to build a snowman?
And Inakina starts off by apologizing to Sayuru, not just for missing the student-teacher day, but for all of the times that she has been away because of work recently. And she goes to say that, you know, particularly with the ULFs around, she's needed at work much more than normal. But because of that, when she does have time off, she wants to devote the most of it that she can to him. And she brings up some other of his friends and what their parents do. And she's like, I may not be able to do this and I may not be able to do that, but I promise you, I will find the one thing that I can do for you better than anyone else can.
I do think this is an important lesson for, I guess, all of us as a takeaway, right? Because she doesn't have a solution, but merely by communicating that it is also a stressor for her and that she understands, she has zeroed the clock on his anxiety and hers because they've communicated of where each other are in that moment. Even just expressing, yo, I know things suck and there's not a whole lot I can do about it. When I can, I will. Even just that gives somebody a lot of breathing room.
It's a very effective scene, at least for me. But I also am well aware that the Inokita parenting thing has hit me harder than either of you over the course of this show.
No, like straight up, you're absolutely correct. It's been more of a thing that touched closer to home for you. But even with all the jokes I've been making of it this entire time, this scene was still executed well and had a great lesson attached.
And she begs Sayuri to come out. And finally, the door to the bedroom opens just a crack and some fingers are there. And she kneels down and he pushes the door open, runs into her arms and hugs her and cries. And I choked up. Because, man, every time Bug gets hurt or is sad and he comes running to me and just dives into a hug, it makes me want to cry because he's sad and I don't want Bug to be sad. And, sorry.
Take a minute. Do your breathing.
Grandma is crying. Inokita is crying. Sayuri is crying. I'm almost crying. And she finally pulls back from the hug just enough to be like, hey, let's go do this. And she reaches into her bag, pulls out the thing of paper crafts.
And John outside the door, his weird, creepy work finished, smiles and walks off.
Yes. At the arena, Godai meets back up with Ichijo, and he just smiles and thumbs up. Ichijo smiles and gives a thumbs up back.
Do some back and forth nodding.
Everything seems to be okay. He's unlocked this new power and has not fallen to darkness. But on a rooftop, Baruba is standing there looking out over Tokyo, and Dagova comes walking out. He's like, so God all failed? And she asks, so are you going to start the ultimate darkness yourself? He once again says, sounds like fun.
Yep. And especially given what we picked up in the outro when he says, entertain me more.
What are you going to do to make me smile?
Yeah. I am really excited for the dark parody of Godai.
We do also now, for the first time, just like how Baruba has the rose tattoo on her forehead, we see Daguva's, and it is a much more elaborate and stylized four-horned Kuga symbol.
Mm-hmm.
God damn this three-parter. What do we want to pick as our ranking?
Might I suggest War Crimes?
War Crimes?
War Crimes. Good, yeah, yes. Sure.
Is Dildo a monster or supporting cast?
Yes, Dildo is a monster and a supporting cast.
Like Chocolate Silence!
Given that we seem to have decided that our monsters are the ones who participate in the game, I think that that cements Dildo in supporting cast.
Yeah, like tertiary supporting cast, you know? He's probably on the same tier as Jean on the human side.
Shall we start with Dildo, then?
Dildo, much like Zajo, doesn't really further the plot, but does enrich the world by existing. And unlike Zajo, he's around enough for us to actually get to know him, and I personally found him very interesting. I give my county boy 4 war crimes.
I think, actually, Dildo adds a bit more than Zajo did. Granted, you could have continued on with the Go wearing the bracelets and doing their own thing, and not too much would have changed. But man, knowing that the Go are in a position where they can have someone else count for them,
of a cast ostensibly higher than theirs,
adds so much to the Go specifically and the Gurungi as a whole. Because what distinguishes them from the meh or the zoo who are just given a bracelet and done, do your own math. It makes me wonder almost, is it a sign of honor or is it the Go aren't trusted? Or that maybe they are too busy? I suppose when, you know, you're slaughtering hundreds, yeah, that does get a bit tricky to keep track of. He's a fascinating character. Every time he talked, I was always amused just because of how deep his voice was. And yeah, to emphasize the point that Baruba is making about how the differences between the Linto and the Gurungi are vanishing. He's a great character. I think I agree with you, 4 war crimes.
I do love his plot vehicle of being the introduction to a lot of other aspects of this world. There are a lot of questions surrounding his counting and why he has to do it. but we get the impression that it is the record that is important, not necessarily the kills themselves, with his reset. And that's an important thing to note.
Oh, man, I'm sorry to interject, but just thinking about it, the fact that Gadol was like, I'm going to kill you because the abacus broke and my game reset, and Doldo just being like, yep, that's fine. This is a normal thing.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't have that arrogance. He just kind of accepts the world around him as it is and responds to it accordingly. Yeah, I very much like that we set his power level and then established him being killed by two of our regular police chuckleheads. I'm going to give him a 3-5. Probably not instrumental to the plot going forward, but definitely an important character.
The show is better for him having been there.
Absolutely, and his human aesthetic and voice, very, very cool.
Yeah.
I didn't care for the ass-faced bird monkey.
I know, you're not a big fan of the Tengu. I like that they gave him the traditional robe and stuff. That was a nice touch.
Mm-hmm.
That gives us a 3.8333 repeating. All right.
Got old time?
Gadol is hands down the best monster design of the series so far. It has colors, it has a strong identifiable silhouette, and varying texture to keep it interesting. It is immediately identifiable what he is. I wish the forms had more differences than just the eyes and weapons, aside from Shocker's gold. But asking for 5 costumes for a single monster of the week might be overkill. I'm not sure how European military relates to beetles, but his human form is at least distinctive. A solid 5, top-tier design, not just for the Gurungi but for Kaijin in general.
Sorry, for our listeners, because I think this is the first time we've used the term Kaijin. Kaijin, much like how Kaiju means mysterious beast, Kaijin is mysterious person.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He's stern and calculated. You know Gadol is strong without him doing anything, just by how he carries himself. And where other Gurungi are arrogant, he is proud. He's let down by Kuga for most of these episodes, which just makes him all the more intimidating. Another 5. But his plan is lacking. Challenging himself against Linta warriors goes back to that pride thing. He isn't going after the weak, he wants a fight. That's cool. But it doesn't have the wacky flair I like to see, and unlike Beta, whose game shaped the episode, Gadol's isn't used to much effect. He's targeting cops, but it's only after his game is on hold that any of our cops are actually in danger. 3 out of 5. That's a 4.3 repeating. Of course, war crimes.
Amir, are you going with design his human form? The eye was drawn to him the moment he stepped on screen for the first time. He stood out amongst the other go. Even when you're looking at leather intellectual James Dean, a Yakuza, him. Yeah, I don't quite get what it has to do with rhinoceros beetle either, but I've accepted the goes don't really translate as well. His monster form is one of the strongest designs we've seen. I loved the use of shifting the eye color to signify what version he was switching into. I agree, a little more variation between the forms would have been cool, but that is a big ask of the costume department. And yes, Shocker form looked so good. That is probably the best Gurungi design. They pulled out all of the stops for him. His design's an easy 5. Behavior, yes, I agree. He is proud, not arrogant. It's martial prowess. It is a general confidently striding the field of battle. The fact that he thought to take advantage of, oh, Kuga got this upgrade because of this. Everything else we've been doing playing the game as normal hasn't worked. Why don't we try this as well? Inventive, creative. He is, again, being a strong leader. And I appreciate that. I think I agree. Another 5. Methodology. It is a little weaker, and it's not the focus. But I do genuinely appreciate, especially after the last several Gurungi explicitly stating that they were trying to give themselves the easiest thing possible, that he is seeking a challenge. But it doesn't play into the story. So I think, yeah, I agree with you. It's a 3. So that also gives me a, was it 4.33 repeating? War crimes.
So I guess it's on to me. I'm going to start with design. I'm going to mirror a lot of what you guys said, But in terms of design, I really liked the rigidity of his both human form and his grungy form. The Japanese term for a rhinoceros beetle is kabutomushi, which is samurai helmet insect. So they have implicit connections to the military in terms of, you know, that samurai aesthetic. And that's a word that came to mind for me when I observed his design and his behavior is the formality of all of it. Even his monster form, everything was orderly, everything was neat, and the changes between his different forms were very subtle, but purposeful. I liked that. I liked his human form. I especially liked his grungy form. I think you're correct. This is the strongest grungy form we've seen so far. Just a very good aesthetic. I loved it. 5 out of 5. Behavior. Did have some of that pride, but when I look at his behavior, there is a strategy at play. For me, Kuga got a power up, so I get a power up. Isn't like a pride thing. It's tactically the best decision. You're right, he didn't have the same arrogance. I think the going after police was also a tactical decision on his part. If we remove Kuga's support base that these Linto are providing, not only do I get my challenge and that I get to go after enemy warriors, but I get to cripple the enemy's tactical support as well. It's never explicitly said. Maybe that's me kind of filling in my own headcanon around him a little bit. So 5 out of 5 on behavior as well. Methodology, it all resonates together because, yes, he's removing police officers, but it's almost an afterthought to everything else. It is... like, there's no sadism to it. It's almost surgical. It's formalized.
The line that he had about how he was only going to use the new power if they fought back, implying that if he got the drop on them, it would just be his regular base form. That's an interesting take on things.
It's structured. It's disciplined. So this is a Grongi that worked for me very, very well. I'm going to give him a 4 for methodology. So that gives me a 4.66 war crimes.
That gives him a 4.44 repeating war crimes.
I don't think that's the highest, but it might be a tie.
Second only to Bot Up.
And then I guess on to the episodes.
The plot for this episode is mostly focused on Gadol, finally bringing the Gurungi back to the spotlight. The B plot with the Nakata seems an odd fit to pair with the penultimate monster, but it supports the theme of doing what you can. We get an upgrade in war crimes, and the cops finally get a kill. And in Nakata's season-long subplot comes to a realistic if not wholly satisfying conclusion. 4.5 out 5. There is a lot of playing with angles in these episodes. One of my favorites being the Dutch angle of Gadol walking on the bridge to meet Dildo. And a white room like that pool makes for a really good place to play with color. This is a 5. The fights. Where to even begin? We get a few, and all of them are amazing. We get Gadol turning Kuga's weapon against him, Titan form is cut to pieces, Gadol no-selling the rising mighty kick, Gadol versus Dildo, there is so much fighting and all of it is top tier. I'd give a 6 if I could, but alas 5 is the best I can give. That's an average of a 4.83 repeating, of course, war crimes.
Alright, so plot. Three-parters are hard. There's typically a low point, and I was pleasantly surprised that they kept the pace through all three episodes. I'm so jaded by Power Rangers barely being able to do two-parters, let alone threes. The game felt important again. But that could be because Gadol felt important, like Jayza and Babel did not. The B-plot with Inakita, again, no surprise, resonates with me very strongly. I do like the realistic. There's not a good answer, but this is the best we can do, and it's enough. Seeing the developments of the war crimes, I realize I'm just basically parroting everything you're saying. It's all great. I'm gonna give plot a 5. Cinematography. I'm not a fan of Dutch angles, but I do appreciate their use. However, the moment for me was the rack zoom on Inakita, because it had Jaws energy. Great use of camera angles. Despite the point I made pointing out the lens flares, I enjoyed them. They added to it. The haziness around Daguva and when it was and wasn't there, tying into the plot as well as the cinematography was great. 5. And fights. My God. Gold standard. These were beautiful. Spectacular. I love seeing practical effects. I love seeing Kuga's armor get damaged. It adds weight to the fights that isn't there. Seeing the infighting of the Gurungi, particularly seeing Gadol get hit and having it affect him for the first time. And then to see him, you know, just rip part of Doldo's wing off. The introduction of Amazing Mighty right here at the end. Great. It's 5. This is perfect. I loved everything about these 3 episodes on all categories, so that makes it easy for me. Mine's a 5.
I'm going to bring us back down a little bit. I thoroughly enjoyed these episodes. Plot-wise, there's nothing really for me left to say that you guys haven't already covered, so I'm just going to comfortably say it was a 4-5 for me. It is incredibly well told. Tonally, it felt a little weird to have us try and be as invested in Inokita and her son and the relationship therein while we're trying to figure out how to stop the dude that's ripping Kuga's support system out from under him systematically.
I think it makes sense that if you're going to wrap up her story, you put her in the situation where it's like she has to be on the job because we cannot stop this particular Gurungi without her.
I guess for me, I just didn't feel like that had enough teeth this late in the game with everything else going on. That being said, I don't want to sound like it was negative. It was told well. It was an important point. Combat's a straight 5. Everything we got was spectacular. We got great practical effects, both in the destruction of Kuga's armor, the scenery around. We had some very dynamic fight scenes using multiple levels. I loved it. I loved everything about it. So 5 out of 5. Cinematography, I did enjoy the rack zoom. I feel like it was employed better earlier in the series when Ichijo figured out the completely esoteric murder scheme of Sea Snake Lady. That moment landed for me because I could feel all the wheels click into place in his head. And that's kind of my theme for this episode in terms of cinematography, is everything was done really well, but everything that was used here, we have seen used better in other episodes. So for the reason that everything was good, but we've seen better, it's a 4 out of 5 for me. Gives me an average score of 4.5 war crimes on this episode.
That brings us to a 4.7666 repeating war crimes for the episode.
Which is definitely iced episode. And rightfully so.
These were great. This was so nice after the slump we'd been in to pull back to this.
Mm-hmm. Now it's off to the psychotic pick-me girl.
So, with that being said, join us next week. We'll be watching episodes 47 and 48, Decision and Kuga.
You can reach us by email at commentarytrack@gmail.com or on Twitter at commentarytrack. You can support us at patreon.com/thecommentarytrack. For $5 a month, you get access to our running commentary of every episode and bi-monthly-ish bonus episodes.
Are you a cuddly raccoon now? Spectacular.